call the May 24th meeting of the Mill Creek City Council to order, March 24th. And we will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance here.
The flag of the United States of America, the Republic.
Republic, which stands.
Our nation. Under God.
Indivisible.
Liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Naomi, you want to do roll call?
Yes. Mayor Pruitt?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw?
Oh, it's Naomi.
Councilmember Cavallari?
Say here.
Councilmember Todd?
Here.
Councilmember Bond?
Here.
Councilmember Steckler?
Here.
And Councilmember Vanel?
Here.
I think that's better.
We'll take another shot. Next up is audience communication. Did anybody want tonight, any of our callers in?
No.
Okay.
Not right this.
Moving along, we're up to presentations. And this is item B, and this is 19 related planning and emergency functions. Michael?
Thank you, Mayor, members of council. Obviously, we all know that we're in unprecedented times in terms of a public health pandemic, the likes of which I don't think any of us have seen in our lifetime. Before I even address the proclamation of emergency, we thought that we would sequence this the way we do now our daily emergency briefings, which start at 10 a.m. every day, with Grace Lockett in her impressive background in healthcare and hospital compliance and administration to give us the latest data as it relates to COVID-19. Grace?
Good evening, everyone.
Hi, Grace.
Good evening.
I think you have access to the PowerPoint presentation that's on the that's included with the agenda. Does everybody have access to that?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just going to present this update with respect to the coronavirus. And I'm presenting from the perspective of the public health. So I just want to give you up-to-date information about the virus as based on what we know as of today.
Does everybody see?
Okay, Jeff. Could you advance to slide 2? Okay, the most logical place to start a presentation this evening is a definition of what COVID-19 is. It's an infectious disease, and it's a member of a class of coronaviruses, and it's most commonly referred to in the media as COVID-19, but it has a scientific name as SARS-CoV-2. So scientists refer to the virus as the SARS, as one of the members of the SARS family of coronaviruses. The outbreak started in Wuhan, in the city of Wuhan in Hubei province in China in the fall of 2019. The Chinese government significantly delayed publicizing the outbreak of the virus for several months. As a consequence of this action and their failure to disclose, the veracity of the virus and its population has adversely affected other countries' ability to manage and control the spread of the virus worldwide.
Advance.
I've included some statistics that are current as of today. The source is from the World Health Organization through Wikipedia. Worldwide, there's approximately 384,000 cases. We've experienced 16,591 deaths, and that includes deaths that come from the countries that follow below. You can see from this table that the United States is relatively, in terms of the seriousness, we haven't hit our peak yet with this illness. You can see that China had over 80,000 cases, 73,000 of their population recovered, and they had 3,277 deaths. And what they're reporting now is that their people are starting to get better, and they're lifting a lot of the sanctions that have been placed on populations throughout the country.
Hey, Grace.
Yes.
Everything I've read indicates that South Korea is the most, probably the best parallel or comparable for America right now. Do we have those numbers?
No, I don't have those numbers. Do not have those.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Advanced slide. Now, with respect to Washington State, it was the first epicenter for the disease in the United States. And I pulled statistics today from the Washington State Health Department. King County in the state of Washington has the largest infection rate and the highest number of deaths. And Snohomish County ranked second with 519 confirmed cases and 11 deaths. And just looking at the age distribution, beginning at 8:30, advanced slide, you see that it's a pretty equal distribution of cases that have been encountered here in the state. It's pretty equivalent. Now, the initial thought was that young people were not going to be affected at all, but we are starting to see more and more cases throughout the country and in the state of Washington in the lower age group. Advanced slide. With respect to gender, in this state of Washington, more females than males have been affected by the virus, and more females have died than males. In the national, looking at the statistics nationally, it's just the opposite. There have been more males who have been affected and more deaths related to men. Now, just going over the symptoms, because we've added some new symptoms to the list since the CDC began to track the infection earlier this year. There's the non-productive cough, fever, lethargy, breathing impairment, gastrointestinal issues that include diarrhea and vomiting. Recently, scientists in China have analyzed data, and they have found that people affected by the virus have lost their sense of smell and taste. So they're now considering that as a symptom for identification of the virus. The onset usually occurs within 2 to 14 days after being exposed to a person with coronavirus. Advanced slide. Taking you to some frequently asked questions. How long is recovery with the COVID-19 virus? In mild cases, it takes approximately 2 weeks for people to get better. And patients with serious underlying health conditions like heart disease, respiratory disease, diabetes, it can take anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks to get better. Now, the reason why this is going to be a problem and that we have not reached what they consider the peak or the surge is because of community transmission or community spread. That's the transmission of the virus through activities of daily living. There is no direct relationship or exposure to a person who's infected. So you can just be out and about, walking about, going to the grocery store, going shopping, and being exposed to the droplets of another person who's infected and be affected yourself through your nasal passages, through your eyes, through your mouth. And again, this will be the reason why most of the people in this country develop COVID-19. Okay, is quarantine necessary for following the exposure to a person who tests positive for the virus? Yes, it is. People are being asked to stay at home for the recommended 14-day period. And they should avoid contact with any infected person during that time. Now, what if someone in your family, in your household, has the virus? You have obviously been exposed. the recommendation is for that person to be quarantined, but for you to also be quarantined for a 14-day period. And you should avoid contact with that family member for that entire period. And testing would be highly recommended in a case like that. Advanced slide. Are there any containment strategies, and are they working? It's too early to tell. It is likely that containment will reduce the rate at which the infection occurs, but we don't know exactly where on that bell-shaped curve that you've all seen in the media we are at the present time. Our containment efforts support the flattening or the rise of the curve, and it serves to avoid overwhelming the capacity of our healthcare system. So what's been postulated is that we haven't seen the worst yet, meaning we haven't seen the total number or the total population who will be affected by COVID-19 yet. That's supposed to be coming in the next 30 days or so. Can you be reinfected a second time if you recover from the COVID infection? It's not known at present if reinfection is possible. Some individuals who have recovered from the infection have found to have active virus particles in their bloodstream, but more research is needed about that. These people will be extremely important to the future, as their antibodies will be used to craft vaccines that will be available on a mass basis in approximately a year to 18 months. Advanced slide. What can the residents of Mill Creek do during this challenging time? First and foremost, stay informed, remain calm and vigilant, and follow the directives of the state and federal government on quarantine and stay-at-home mandates, the recommendations of the medical community, and the preventive care guidelines from the CDC. Now, one person that you've seen in the media at the national level is Dr. Anthony Fauci. Dr. Fauci was very instrumental in coming up with therapies that are being used today for people with HIV and AIDS. He is a true scientist, and I think personally, that's who I look at for my direction as it stands with this virus. So pay attention to the NIH and Dr. Anthony Fauci. Okay, local government should provide flexibility for the operational demands associated with managing such a public health pandemic as COVID-19. I think as a group of legislators, you need to advocate for any federal funding to supplant your operational budget and your manpower resources. We want to thank you, Council, for the support that you have given our management team and our city manager. And we are there to affect positive change for the community and to protect them to the best of our abilities. Thank you.
Thanks, Grace. Michael?
Council received a copy of the proclamation that I signed on March 20th, retroactive to Saturday, April 18th. As I believe you all know, the only real powers I've exercised is with regard to the closure of City Hall to the public and the ordering of all the staff to work remotely. In that regard, I can't thank the team, the management team that has constituted rather quickly and getting all of the departments to understand the gravity of the situation in working from home and really addressing IT-related matters in real time to enable us to be productive from home. At the same time, we realize that this is a very feedback-rich environment that we're working in, and so the frequency of our management meetings is daily. And out of that work, we've discovered a continuing plethora of issues that we need to address, but we're making some major progress. And there'll be more information on this as we develop the discussion tonight. There are contract administration issues and others that we're going to be addressing. But for the time being, we are working in a way that has our team producing a body and volume of work in real time that I'm very proud of. We're also, in addition, asking all of our teams to provide activity logs on a daily basis so that we can track the data as it relates to the work and the modifications. Today, I closed off all playgrounds, and we have teams putting up signs. Gina and the marketing team are putting together a barricade, what the DPW calls the Type 2 barricade, with boundaries and signage that have been laminated up at Staples. So on a daily basis, as we adjust to this ever-deepening crisis, we're exacting more emergency measures. I don't anticipate anything extraordinary at this point, but we're monitoring the media and getting the notifications online from our partners at the county and the state level. We also are informed that Seattle provides a unique dynamic that's different from New York City. What we lack here generally in density, we have environmental factors with relating to humidity and temperature that may show this COVID virus growing at a quicker rate. We are working to minimize the number of people that are here at City Hall at any given time, and we deeply appreciate those of you that are able to join remotely. So what I will be asking for down in the proclamations section is a support to the City Council would confirm my manager's proclamation declaring the emergency and ratifying the actions I've outlined for you thus far that I've taken in response to the proclamation pursuant to the Mill Creek Municipal Code section 8.08.100. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Let's see. Next is Chief Eastman. Is he on? John?
I am here. Thank you. I just wanted to provide some information that good news that none of our officers are ill. And we have not had to quarantine any of our officers. We continue to monitor that situation, providing them with personal protective equipment, and work closely with Fire District 7 on responses to residences where there's maybe some suspicion of infection. As far as continuity of operations, we already have contingency plans if we were to lose as many as an entire shift, if they were exposed to somebody confirmed with COVID-19. And worst case scenario, we would use existing mutual aid agreements with surrounding agencies to supplement our manpower needs during any potential quarantine time or time when somebody's off with an actual illness.
John?
Thank you, Chief. Anything further? If not, we'll move on to Jeff.
John Stecker. John.
I missed my little button. I can't click one. I want to thank Grace for that presentation. And Michael, my question was, I'm not sure how much this information we're putting on the website, but this is a great opportunity for us as a city to provide education to the citizens. And as much information as we can put on the City of Mill Creek website to inform them about the virus, about the numbers, I think it would be good for us to do that. In addition, I know with Governor Inslee's recent decree to close all non-essential businesses, there is a great desire to learn the definition of essential businesses. There is a website for that. You can't get into it. You can put a message down to get back to you. But I know that a couple of businesses I work with put messages down early this morning, and as of tonight, still have not heard back as to whether or not they should be open on Thursday morning. If there was any way that we could get that list and publish it on the web on the Mill Creek website, that'd be extremely helpful to a lot of our local businesses. That it's surprising what businesses are essential or considered essential, and which ones are not. And I'm just thinking it'd be great if we could start providing that kind of information and be a source of information for the citizens.
Through the chair, what I would say is that we already have a draft of anticipating council supporting the emergency declaration or the emergency proclamation.
so that once the vote is taken, Bill's on standby. We are going to be posting that immediately, and we will most certainly follow up with all of the directives that we get from council, and these suggestions are excellent. We're monitoring a number of different things. If there's a more clear answer relating to essential and non-essential, we'll get it up there. We've already began publicizing the closure of our parks, and you'll see that information campaign intensify as children grow more restless and want to go out on the playgrounds. This is a really important opportunity for us to support this notion of reducing the number of folks that contract this virus to try and, as we've all heard, flatten the curve. So any suggestions that any of you have, please send them to me, because we will be acting upon any of these ideas. I think it was Councilwoman Vigneault that first reported in that there were kids on the playground equipment. I've received a number of calls from residents regarding large groups of people, and we're working our very best to disperse that. We've spoken with Chief Eastman in this regard, regarding our limits as our limited police powers. That we thankfully have in a democracy, but nonetheless asking people to move along and reminding them of the crisis. We're doing this in a cooperative way, and we're looking to utilize communication as our sole enforcement tool at this point.
Councilmember Vigneault, you were next. She can't say anything. You raised your hand.
Oh, I didn't mean to raise my hand. I think I was teasing with John, so sorry. Okay. If I hit something, I did not mean to.
Okay. Councilmember Cavallari's next, and then Councilmember Bond.
Thanks, Mayor.
Mark doesn't need it.
Chief, are you still on?
I am.
So one of the things that I was kind of struggled with a little bit and I wanted to talk about was the potential. I mean, we all know that if all it would take is one or two to really devastate the forces here. So at some point, I think it's appropriate to have a conversation going forward regarding reserve police officers. But I'd also want to know how sound are our interlocal agreements. And let me give you an example. If a whole shift is wiped out, what are the nuances to that?
Well,
meaning does Marysville come in and all of a sudden provide three officers?
No, our first response would be to cover the shifts with existing officers, existing Mill Creek officers. So that would, and we've had to do that with, due to injuries and that sort of thing in the past. And so it would have to get pretty dire before we would be asking for help. Our next step would be that we would ask for assistance on priority calls, and we would have a limited number of staff to handle non-priority calls. And then our last case, the worst case scenario, would be where we would need actual assistance with officers in Mill Creek. And I've already had those conversations with the chief of Linwood and informally with the precinct chief for the county.
Okay, so as a policy going forward, I think this is kind of shining a light on the issue that the potential for reserve units or reserve deputies might be a possibility, just as kind of a backup, because I really don't see, in worst case scenario, Linwood sending us a half a dozen officers when they're going to be up to their neck as well. So I think on paper it's a good idea that we have this interlocal agreement. I just don't ability of it.
The challenge with reserve officers is they're volunteers, and I think we would have to have a policy conversation about whether we would expose volunteers to potential infection. For example, we're not using any citizen patrol officers to for anything because of their volunteer nature. We can ask our full-time officers to be out there in the public and potentially put themselves at risk. I think it's a different question to ask somebody who's volunteering their time. So I like the idea of reserves. I just don't know if that would help in this situation.
It's kind of, I mean, the reason I would I know agencies that do it, and I'm not saying we have to decide now. The philosophy behind it is simply look at our military. They can't keep a million-man force at all times, so they keep 300,000 troops and then 700,000 reservists. So I'm not saying that number or anything close to that percentage. I just think the mindset or the brainchild behind it is sound.
The difference being that reservists are paid, but I think it's a worthwhile discussion. Happy to have it.
Thanks, Chief.
Okay, Councilmember Bond.
Thank you, Mayor. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. So I would just say, having been a reserve, one of the first reserves for the city of Mill Creek, there may come a time when we want to have the discussion. We're in the middle of a crisis. I don't think we should make radical changes or incur significant long-term costs for what essentially is going to be 6 months and probably the worst 6 months of our lifetime. But let's just kind of keep it in perspective. Yes, plan for worst case scenarios. We've got the sheriff's office, we've got Linwood, we've got Bothell. We're going to need to be there for them when they're going, we don't have the people. And just as much as we're going to need them to be there for us should we find ourselves in a pinch.
Okay. So next up is finance and technology updates by our new finance director, Jeff Valentine.
I'm gonna
Madam Mayor.
Swing this over.
Madam Mayor.
Yes?
This is Mike Todd. Sorry to break in, but I'd love to send a message to Jeff. He didn't see it. Two things going on. First, before we move on, we need to formally have a motion to confirm the emergency declaration that our city manager declared. So I'd like to make that motion.
It's actually coming up later, Mike.
Is it? Okay. Thanks.
It's on the agenda.
Okay. Second thing was I sent a link to everybody, the list of the 14-page list of the essential businesses. I sent that to all city council members, city manager Grace and Naomi. So it's on your email.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks. Go ahead.
So before we move on to the next thing, are we through talking about COVID-19 and our potential responses and or ideas behind it? Okay.
We have two more topics, so.
Thank you.
And Dana, just a reminder for those that are not muted, if you can mute yourself. Thank you. So thank you for letting me join the Mill Creek team. I appreciate it. I just want to give a quick update. I haven't been here very long, but been already working diligently with the team. Fantastic team. Just a quick update on the finance. We're still working on October through December close. The bank reconciliations are nearly complete. We're still working through some interfund transfers, allocations to CIP funding. Some payroll benefit and direct payroll, trying to get those into automatic uploads. We see a lot of efficiencies that we can create here, and we're excited about getting at that sooner rather than later. There's some debt services moves that we still have to do. We are fairly remote at this point. We do have an IT technician, but accounting technician that's working remotely on the reconciliations. So I'm working with her directly on those. We have our payroll functions working remotely as well as our benefits. We have daily call-ins and I'm able to track the time on quarter hour increments. So we feel very confident we're getting good benefit there. We also have a small staff here, essential staff here, trying to even automate the processes that we have for accounts payable. As an example, we used to receive nothing but hard copy invoices. We're now requesting PDF versions of it as well. We're setting up a process to scan invoices, getting out to the receivers and getting a three-way match so we can all do that remotely and then keep that online. Eventually, we're hoping that you can actually hyperlink from the claims register and see the backup. Of course, you'll still have the original copy for your review. We're tying into the banking system, even in these remote operations. I will note that LGIP, I expect the interest rate to significantly drop off due to the Fed's at 0% interest. So we're not receiving very much interest at all. So we moved about $3 million over recently from LGIP to our bank account, based on some of the transactions that we have. So we're in good shape there right now. I will say I do have some concern, obviously, with the economy. At some point during a study session, I'll share with you some of the analysis that we did on Department of Revenue sales and use tax and what the impact may or may not be for the city. But I'll have that ready for your review when you're ready for that. And we're looking hard right now on budget and trend reviews. We're creating a 12-year outlook. I want to be able to map that out for the council so you can see worst case, best case scenario, and a realistic projection. So as you make the decisions, you will have very transparent budget at your fingertips here very, very soon. On the IT side, our IT manager left at the end of last week. We did go on contract with IS Outsource. We actually have one of the technicians here. He's been fantastic. His name's Joe, if you've already been working with them. They're providing tier one through tier three help desk support. They have a lot of municipal experience and actually have experience with New World. So it's a pretty good marriage. They've been doing quite a bit with the local government. They're reviewing the security logs and I'm being kept up to date on those, such as that we do know, for example, the PD vehicles are they're getting scanned by the Netherlands. Our firewall's stopping that, but I've asked to get a white paper from IS Outsource to provide the cost to do a threat assessment, at least an internal one, and then potentially go to an outsource one. I do want to do a threat assessment so we can make sure that we're protected as well as possible against ransomware and those sorts of things. And we're looking at disaster recovery and backup, the frequency level. I'm a little concerned that it in my opinion, should be daily, but we want to make sure that the weekly at least is will suffice. And I'll give a recommendation once we've had a chance to do that threat assessment. We've also worked as a team to determine essential tasks, and we've set up remote access clients for our users across all of our departments, so those essential functions can take place remotely. And that completes my update.
Okay, any questions? Okay, next up is contract administration update by Gina. Is she here?
Good evening, Council. Yes, I'm here. Good evening, Council. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So my report, I'll start off with my operations and maintenance crew. My crew of four, they have all been able to report this week. They are not showing signs of sickness, so they are reporting to City Hall. The rest of my department, the office staff in engineering and planning, started telecommuting this past Monday. We have this week began working on closing city parks starting today, this morning, closing city parks, installing barricades and yellow caution ribbon around playground equipment, and also installing signs with the messaging of the parks being closed. My crew is also focusing on the sanitation of City Hall South and supporting police and city staff that's still reporting to City Hall South with the sanitation. That's our support on that. Crew continues monitoring critical waterways, although we haven't gotten any rain over the past few days, but monitoring critical waterways to ensure that they're clear of debris and they're flowing. And we stand ready to ensure traffic flow on city streets should there be any debris or traffic control that is needed. There is a possibility that we may need to reduce street sweeping, but so far we've kept our schedule pretty close to the usual. I have communicated, even though drinking water, power, and waste management do not formally fall under the city's responsibility, I have been in communication with utility service providers to ensure our partnership with them and our support. And those are Silver Lake Water District, Alderwood Water and Wastewater District, Snohomish PUD and Puget Sound Energy, and also Waste Management. And I offered them the city's explicit support during COVID-19. So my staff stands ready to reprioritize staffing assignments in order to maintain these essential services. And so should they need support in administration, engineering, or operations, we stand ready to support them. My staff continues processing permits, and starting last week, even prior to the governor's executive order last night, we have been already prioritizing permits for medical clinics, animal hospitals, grocery stores, pharmacy, and gas stations. And effective today and through tomorrow, for those facilities that fall under essential facilities, we have been conducting inspections with live video remotely. Now, for capital projects, this has been there's been a lot of discussion, or a significant amount of discussion, over the past few days involving our legal counsel. And it's become clear that we have had to make a determination as to what is an essential capital project and what is a non-essential capital project. And of course, the definition of essential and non-essential is dynamic, and it's just based on what's happening in the health aspect of our communities and our country. At this time, what I am defining and what we are defining as an essential capital projects are those projects that have already been awarded by council. So there are four projects that have been awarded by council. And those are Seattle Hill Road, Pavement Preservation, Heron Park, Surface Water Sea Failures, and the IMS Pavement Data Gathering. So those are what we're at this time defining as essential. And then capital projects that are being defined as non-essential are those that have not been awarded by council. So we've had three bid openings and that have not been awarded by council. So pavement marking, RRFB installation, and HVAC replacement, those have not been awarded by council, so they're being defined as non-essential. Now, one of the things that we're evaluating, even for those essential projects, is whether it is possible to begin and complete the construction this summer, because we don't want to have projects left half built. And so again, we're working this.
We're muted.
Oh, let's see, that's okay. Gina, so let's say they have grant money attached to it. Is that in jeopardy now, or is the Fed or the rules become kind of sensitive to what we're doing now?
That's a great question. Seattle Hill Road actually has federal funds, has $720,000 in federal funds. And at this time, there hasn't been any communication from the state or the feds to local jurisdiction about flexibility, but this is a very dynamic environment. Just this week, earlier this week, Kathleen Davis from WSDOT shared with local agencies some information as to what WSDOT is doing with their capital projects. All right, and then the last thing I had as far as update from my department is obviously last night the governor issued an executive order that goes into effect tomorrow evening, and we're working with our legal counsel as to how best to proceed with that and how it impacts both public works and private construction such as the farm.
Okay,
that completes my report.
Okay, anything else, Michael? John?
Yeah, it looks like the report that Mike sent out to us, I was looking on it, the construction is considered an essential business. So I don't see that affecting any of our current construction projects. That's a really good list that Mike sent out.
Gina?
Yeah, so as far as the capital projects and what is included or not included with the governor's executive order, it depends on what's defined as an essential facility. And so, again, tomorrow morning, we have a conference call with our legal counsel to confirm, out of these capital projects that we're considering essential, which ones of those fall under an essential facility, and therefore we can proceed in spite of the governor's executive order.
It's my understanding the governor is supposed to be issuing some guidance tonight and further clarifying how this relates to construction activity, both for private and public. I've been spending most of the day dealing with this.
Thank you. And that's my understanding as well. Our interim city attorney is connected with that information. And again, he'll have an update for us tomorrow during our conference call at 9 o'clock.
Hey, Mike?
Just real quickly,
I was just going to report that the SCIT meeting this morning had an extensive discussion. A lot of folks on the call, probably 40 people on the call, from all over the state and from locally, and a lot of discussion. But the big construction folks that are doing the big projects like Sound Transit, they're moving ahead. They're assuming that's essential, although that doesn't, our lawyer might not say that. There was a discussion, the AGC is in a discussion about what's relevant, and that's probably what Brian was talking about. But the general attitude was people are moving forward with those projects because they've got safe work patterns in place and they do not want to miss the construction season. They're all sensitive to it. I would suggest that safety and numbers might be our better approach than getting our legal beagles to spend a bunch of our money and be really nitpicky about it. We ought to be doing what everybody else is doing. But we don't need to be out in front and be more careful. Our lawyers are not the experts on this. Maybe they are. Sorry, but let's be careful about just listening to the legal guys looking at stuff, and let's look at what the rest of the county is doing. I think it makes sense to follow what WashDOT's doing, what the other construction companies are doing, what other cities are doing. Thanks.
Okay, city manager? He's muted. Wait, you're muted. Just give it a second.
Okay. Can you hear me now? Mayor, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I would ask you to pay attention to this from two different perspectives. There's the top-down orders coming from the governor, and then there are the practical realities of the potential for the actual construction workers themselves to be quarantined because perhaps a family member or someone else that they've been exposed to, or they themselves are presenting with symptoms. So it's something else that we're attempting to pay attention to, particularly as it relates to the Seattle Hill Road project. Imagine a scenario where we begin in earnest on that construction contract and the road is half torn up and the contractors' employees themselves are unable to continue to work, thus delaying the performance under their agreement with the city. We could, in theory, have a project that's opened up and unable to be closed, so that we could envision a scenario where we have a delay in finishing the project and a protracted time period in which Seattle Hill Road could be partially opened. We are working to ensure that, depending on what level or stage of that contract, there would be a certain protocol that would enable us to employ, for example, for the sewers bypass mechanisms, to foresee or to envision a delay or protraction that goes beyond what was the anticipated construction schedule before the virus. So the more we are operating in the dark without actual numbers, the more this is a dynamic situation for all of us. And we just wanted to share this dilemma and make it explicit for the council and the community that these are one of the things that we're actively monitoring. In regard to Councilman Todd's concern about working in addition to with our legal beagles with the others, really there's a white paper out on this that relates to delayed performance and what are called force majeure clauses. There typically are events that are beyond the control of all the contracting parties. The events up until the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, we would all agree were unforeseeable. But we're in a territory where there is foreseeability, and the question is, how do we proceed? And there's a full range of remedies that all contractors and all parties such as the city or who have these agreements outstanding or already executed need to pay attention to, because none of us can now say that we didn't know that there was an increase in the number of folks that were impacted, and we should fully expect that
construction workers, as well as all of us, are going to be impacted. So there may be a performance dynamic that comes into play with the contractors. The other thing that we're looking at from the inspector side of this, through the city and our work with the farm and other contractors, Gina is working really hard at ensuring that we're able to do remote inspections where appropriate, so that the construction manager at the farm would be able to work with the inspector to be able to hold cameras wherever they're directed, so that we can do our part to maintain continuity on our construction projects. More on this as the time develops and as the infection rates become more pronounced. But unlike a lot of the staff here at City Hall, we have public works. So do the contractors have indispensable crews that must either report for the job or it's going to slow it down.
Of the four projects that we have a green light on now, has any of the vendors or contractors indicated that they might not have a crew, or are they signaling anything, or is it ready to go?
Not as
of none of the four contractors. None of the four contractors have voiced any concern. It seems that contractors in general are pausing and waiting to receive a lead from their local governments and local agencies.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay, with that, we now move up to proclamations. And first up is we have a motion to move pursuant to Mill Creek Municipal Code Section 8.08.100 that the City Council confirm the City Manager's proclamation declaring an emergency and ratifying the actions taken by the City Manager in response to the proclamation. Do we have a motion, Mike? Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Ready to vote? Okay. Noes, abstentions, passes unanimously. And then next up is our annual proclamation for Music for Life. The proclamation is in your packet. Usually I just read this. So why don't you just take a look at it, and does the council doesn't adopt this? Michael?
That's correct, Mayor.
Okay, so it's in your packet. I'll spare you listening to me. But they requested that we do this again this year. Unfortunately, John, it looks like they won't have a concert for you to attend.
No, they won't. But
we are on the record as approving that. So, okay. Next up is a public hearing. This is the continued hearing, and all we're going to do is continue it again. So this is a public hearing on the 2019-24 Capital Improvement Plan Amendment. Michael or Gina?
Thank you, Mayor.
First we have to open the public hearing at 7 p.m. So go ahead. He's not speaking. He's speaking, but that's it.
Michael, we can't hear you.
I think he's forgetting to unmute. There he goes.
Keep turning it off to reduce reverberation. I apologize. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yes.
So we have worked again in earnest to appreciate how our capital planning, as recently as a couple of weeks ago, is impacted by the deepening pandemic. And so I'd ask Director Hortolosa to provide an outline of where we've been and where we're at now. Go ahead, Gina.
Okay, thank you, Michael. So as presented previously to council, the major amendment, the main reason for the amendment to the CIP was to include this new project, CIP 20-PW01, which consisted of RRFBs, and we called it Group A and Group B. Group A being the RFBs associated with existing RFBs, one at the elementary school and one at the middle school, both of which are solar and not very reliable. And Group B being a completely new crosswalk and RRFB at Jackson High School. So since our last public hearing, bids were opened on this project. We opened the bids on March 17th, and actually I should say we opened one bid because the city only received one bid on this project. It was last week on March 17th, and the bid was from Transportation Systems. There were no math errors in their bid, and we have not yet checked contractor references. In your agenda summary, there's a table that shows the bid tab summary. And as you can see, the engineer's estimate for the total, Group A plus Group B, was slightly above $356,000. And the one bid that we received for the total of Group A and Group B was slightly over $370,000. So about a delta of $14,000, with the bid being higher than the engineer's estimate. I will say again that the two existing RRFBs are functional. This time of the year, we're in the spring, they get more solar power, and so they're slightly more reliable than in the fall and in the winter. They're also being used less frequently because the Everett School District, like all of our other school districts in the state, are closed. We are continuing to do research on the alternative of upgrading the batteries of the existing solar RRFBs in Group A. That research is not complete. We're reaching out to vendors, and in particular, the vendor that manufactured the existing RRFBs. And we're also reaching out to other agencies, such as Snohomish County and the City of Federal Way, to learn lessons learned from them as to what they've experienced with battery upgrades. I will say that over the weekend, I reached out to staff at Snohomish County requesting that the funding for the Group B, so that's the RRFB and crosswalk at Jackson High School, be reallocated to what is now one of our four essential capital projects, and that is Seattle Hill Road pavement preservation, rather than allocating it to Group B, again, the Jackson High School crosswalk. I did get a response today, this afternoon at around 2 o'clock, from county staff, and they seem receptive to reallocating the $100,000 to Seattle Hill Road as opposed to Jackson High School. The only other thing I'll add is that a couple of additional data points that are relevant, and that is Group A, which is related to the two existing RRFBs. That group is funded with $300,000 in TIB funds. According to our grant award, those funds need to be spent by March 31st of 2022. So we have 2 years and 1 week to spend those funds. And at this time, again, this project is considered non-essential. So we are not planning on proceeding with this project as a capital project.
At this time, we will, again,
there's that research that we're doing as far as the batteries and making the existing situation better. However, given the pandemic that we're all in, I do not feel comfortable pursuing new capital projects that have not yet been awarded by council.
Okay.
And that's all I had on that topic.
Okay.
I'd be happy to answer questions.
John?
Yeah, quick question. Does this have any effect on the money that Terry Ryan had presented to us?
Correct. So former county council member Terry Ryan earlier this year presented a symbolic check at a previous council meeting for the $100,000. And those dollars are associated with Group B. So that's the crosswalk at Jackson High School.
To lose those dollars?
That's not what she's saying.
Sorry,
she wants to apply
question.
It to another project.
We're having some problems with the audio. Get it fixed.
My question, Gina, is how will this affect the money that Terry Ryan had given us for the crosswalk project at Jackson? Are we going to lose it, or can you use it for something else?
So at this time, what I've done is reach out to county staff, and at a staff level, they're receptive to reallocating the dollars from the Jackson crosswalk to specifically Seattle Hill Road.
Mark?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Has anybody talked to Terry, by the way? Just first question.
Michael?
Can't hear you, Mike.
Yes, Councilman Bond. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Through the chair? Yes, Councilman Bond, Gina and I actually had a conference call with Terry Ryan this afternoon and have fully apprised him of what we intend to do.
And what was his response?
He was disappointed because the school is anticipating this, but he also understands that we're having a capacity challenge right now. And one of the things that I'm looking at that our finance director alluded to earlier is that if there's a cash challenge coming in terms of revenue and receipts, that we have an opportunity possibly to retool our staff. Most notably, what Gina and I are looking at is possibly bringing in-house the work that we were expecting to contract to a third-party construction manager for the Seattle Hill Road project. If we're able to bring that cash in-house, that gives us some relief with what we anticipate to be decreased revenues. If our team is working on that, we do not have the opportunity or the capacity to do the work that would be for the Jackson High School. He understood that. And what Mr. Ryan asked was that we strongly consider adding this to our capital plan for next year. God willing, we get past this virus and we return back to normal. But he does understand the challenges that we are under. And he indicated that he would support this however he can, even though he's no longer a legislator, to ensure that the money can be repurposed to Seattle Hill Road rather than a Jackson crosswalk. All he asked for in exchange was a promise that we would continue to keep this in our capital planning for the future. And he certainly was nonetheless disappointed.
Mike,
thank
Todd?
Thank you, Mike.
Sorry, Mike, thank you. Todd?
Yeah, thank you. So if former council member Ryan wants to keep a placeholder in this, I want to put a placeholder in this as well. When I looked at the engineering design for this new crosswalk at Jackson High School, I was alarmed that the crosswalk is indicated to direct people right into the middle of the driveway. Upon talking to staff, the reason it goes into the middle of the driveway is that the school district apparently has plans to close that driveway. It would make sense if this crosswalk is ever done, that it be done in concert with, not sequentially with, a future project by the school district to close that parking lot and close off that driveway. This is silly engineering. This is a waste of public money. I am vehemently against this project until the school district directs what they want to do and takes full ownership. This is not well engineered. And despite what former council member Ryan wants to do, this is not a good idea, and I'm against it. So let's just make sure when this comes up again next year, we're careful and that we're working together with the school district, not sequentially, but working with them, and that it doesn't cost us a bunch of money. Thanks.
Anybody else? Mark Bond?
Yeah, I was not super enthusiastic about this project, but we took $100,000 from somebody and committed to doing it. So if we're going to change our mind, I would like to have what our city manager is saying is the blessing of the parties involved. Otherwise, I feel like it's not really acting with the level of integrity that I would feel comfortable with. So as long as everybody involved, including the former council member who gave us the money with a commitment to put that project in, is comfortable with this new direction, I'm fine with it as well.
Okay. Okay, so all we're going to do tonight is extend this because we don't have the research and we're not ready to make a decision. But it turns out, Naomi, I believe we don't have to extend to date certain. We just have to extend it. Is that correct? I can't hear you.
I just unmuted. That's correct, Mayor.
Okay, so do we do that by motion or do we just extend it?
You've never set a motion to extend prior.
Okay, so we will just extend this indefinitely. Brian?
Since we opened the public hearing, do we have to give the public an opportunity to comment?
No, public comment was closed.
Okay.
You don't have to. Mike Todd?
Make a motion to table this.
To extend it.
I would make a motion to table it. If we table it, we would future take it off the table, but it would take explicit action to take it off the table. The better way to do it.
Any other comments? Do we have a second?
Just a point of order. I'm having a tough time hearing Mike Todd.
Yeah, I could barely hear you also, Mike.
Sorry, I don't have an ability to change my microphone level. I'll shout at things. My motion is to table the public hearing, the topic of amending our CIP. If we table that motion or table that previous motion to amend our CIP, it would take an explicit action in the future to take it back off the table. So it is even better than extending it to a time uncertain.
Naomi, is that correct? Naomi?
I just unmuted it. Sorry. Yes, that seems more appropriate.
Okay, so we have a motion and Councilmember Cavallari seconded it. Anybody else? Mark, did you have something?
No, but just a comment that the sound is much better. Mike, you're still light, but everybody else is coming through much better than earlier.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Okay, next up is the consent agenda. That's approval of checks number 61702 and through 61771 and ACH wire transfers in the amount of $1,216,413.63. Audit committee council members Vignelle and Todd. Do we have
no exceptions?
No exceptions.
Thank you. Payroll and benefit ACH payments in the amount of $316,747. Any exceptions?
No exceptions.
No exceptions.
And we have the city council meeting minutes of March 10th, 2020. Do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. We're now up to reports. The only thing I have to report today is that I was on a conference call with Congressman Rick Larson and Congresswoman Susan DelBene. They're working very hard back there. I guess it's just crazy. But one of the things that they're working on is a reimbursement to local municipalities for our increased expenses due to the virus. So they said it won't cover all of our costs, but it will alleviate some of them. So if that's the best we can do, given that this is going to hurt our sales tax and certainly our passport business, I certainly gave them my go get them. So that's my reports. Vincent, you're here?
Thanks, Mayor. I thought we were going to talk a little more about the COVID-19 since we did the proclamation. There were a couple of things that I wanted council to be aware of that were avenues that we should discuss and probably give our city manager the purview to kind of, you know, work it through. Anyhow, I was hoping that we would have a consensus to maybe suspend sign ordinances within the city. I think several vendors have mentioned to me that they would like to hang a banner that they're open for business, or please come in and carry out. Some of our second floor vendors, ditto, same thing. They're running the same dilemma. A lot of people don't know they're open. I'd like to couple that with the ability to put that on some of our social media here. I think it's appropriate, and it would be show a great support for local business. And I have a few other ideas too, unless you want to discuss that. Otherwise, I'll just keep moving through it real quick. I know we're going to have some idle city employees that are working remotely that perhaps don't have enough to do. So once this federal stimulus rolls through, or state monies become available, or they have to apply for unemployment, I'd like to have some of our employees that maybe have a little technical know-how assist people with signing up for unemployment, signing up for reimbursement, signing up for programs, or whatever. But the city would provide that avenue and just allow some stress relief for some of our local citizens. Third would be the on a case-by-case basis, or as a policy of deferring payments to small businesses. Let's say they have receipts or monies owed to the city by April 1. I would hope we could have the conversation of pushing it back to maybe May 1 with an open-end policy, or perhaps June 1, depending how long this pans out. Those couple of things, I think, go a long way towards helping the members of our community, and especially the small businesses. And I would really like to have action or some answers on the sign ordinance tonight. I know the others we can kind of craft and work through as we go.
Michael, city manager, do you have anything?
Yes, Mayor. In reading my emergency powers, I saw that there was an opportunity that I could have done that, but I'm conservative with regard to doing things that gets out in front of city council. If it's the will of council that we suspend the sign ordinance to allow for a temporary period of time within which to permit advertising for those carryout businesses and others, I'm here to support the will of the council.
And do you have a legal opinion that we can do that? Did you check with the, as Mike says, legal beagles?
Yeah, I did not. What I was waiting for was to hear from the council. If it's the intention to support this, I believe it's within my authority, and I just wanted to be conservative with getting that advice hypothetically. If the council is intent on supporting such a move, I believe it's within my purview, and it would just be a quick confirmation.
I'm supportive of waiving it, but I just want to know what it is we would be allowing. I don't want to open up for carte blanche and suddenly find massive signs stuck up all over the city. So do we have an idea of what it is these business owners have expressed they would want to do, so we can put some sideboards on what we would be allowing?
So I've heard the sandwich board signs were one, maybe freestanding signs that says we're say things like we're open, carry out, please come in, here's our hours. Or even the second floor businesses like La Palmera may want to carry hang a banner temporarily.
Yeah, so I'd be open.
No, not just.
Go ahead. So, who?
I was just going to say, I'm open to, you know, I think we just need to specify that we'd be allowing things like A-boards, and if we want to allow some kind of banners, I think that's getting a little bit precarious. We need to specify the size limitations and that sort of thing, or else we're going to see banners all over the place.
I also think that we need to have a date certain when this stops. This cannot be a change of our sign code. So,
right.
John, I see your finger waving.
I totally agree. I think as long as we make this date specific between now and April 24th, something like that, that we allow our local businesses the ability to notify people of their hours and services. I don't think that would be, and then it all goes down after that.
Okay, Councilmember Bond, then Vignelle.
I was just going to support the date so that they know. Don't go spend thousands of dollars on a big purple monkey waving some big sign. This is temporary. It's just a chance for you to get the word out, and in a window of time, it will be back to business as usual.
Stephanie?
Yes, that's what I want to say. I would like to see parameters. I'm supportive of this, and we need to support our businesses. We need some parameters on there with the with a guideline on a time frame that this will end, and also we also need to say what we are willing to permit under these new guidelines so that we don't just end up with things that look terrible or neon signs or things like that, that we have specific things that are acceptable and it's laid out. And then, and also so the business owners know what they can do.
Okay, Council Member Holzclaw, then Todd.
I would not tie it to a date. I would tie it to as long as there's a restriction in place, that the stay-at-home order or some other restrictions that keeps the businesses closed, that that's how long it would stay in effect. Otherwise, we may be revisiting this every couple of weeks.
I agree.
Councilmember Todd.
Yeah, thanks. I'm fine with this with restrictions, but I'm a little bit concerned. This is now, once we start saying there's restrictions, and I'm all in favor of the restrictions, there's some work for staff to be done. So let's make sure we don't overload staff. This is in Gina's department, who's already said she's overloaded with a lot of other stuff. So yeah, city manager, what's it going to cost?
I think if we can refer to templates in other places, in my experience with temporary signage has been a time certain. I realize that we may want to tie it to something else, but maybe we give the establishments a chance to do it for 30 days. To Councilman Todd's question, I would expect that we can at least have a publicity campaign ramped up by the communications and marketing team with about 2 hours. That Gina and I would consult with our legal team to write out something that doesn't include lights, would include the sandwich board signage. Maybe we don't add banners for the time being, but that we would have a sandwich board format down below and that the city could support in social media, similar to what we've already put up on the website. So, Councilman Todd, first of all, I greatly appreciate that awareness that what we are added, what adds onto our schedule, we have to draw from somewhere else, but we're a dedicated team, and if the council says this is a priority as well, we'll make time. I would estimate about a total of 5 hours of work amongst staff. 5 hours from Gina and I, communications and marketing, and legal.
Okay, Mike Bond, then Mark Bond.
Yeah, so again, I think Mark Bond made a good comment. The danger is that people spend a bunch of money on this stuff. If business makes the investment, knowing full well this is temporary, that's great. But the business who's next door, who doesn't notice that this is a temporary thing and just says, I'm going to copy my neighbors and go to invest the money, will be surprised. And we've seen that before with, you know, when we get an out of compliance sign, we don't say something about it, and everybody starts copying it, the floodgates are open. So it's got to be, we got to be really careful. They're temporary, and everybody knows they're temporary, and nobody gets mad at us later on. They spend $500 on a banner or a sign that was a short-term use.
Councilmember Bond.
Thank you. I don't want to burden staff either, which with what really should be an almost non-event. I think what we do is we put the word out 2 weeks, and we'll revisit it. Well, 2 weeks, you can. If you want to do some sort of signage that may be outside, you can get it approved by the city. I would say we grant the staff to be very liberal, but they have to bring it before them and approve it. It's an A board. It's a sign. Where are you going to put it? What are you going to do? Okay, that works. And just at their discretion, but very liberal in 2 weeks, and we'll revisit it in 2 weeks. That way, if purple monkeys and crazy stuff shows up, we don't pick on any one person. The 2 weeks is up and we're done.
I like that.
Otherwise, if it's open-ended and we decide, oh my gosh, somebody took advantage of us and has gone way askew of our intentions, and we say, okay, now we're going to shut it down, it looks like we're attacking them. But a date specific keeps it wide open. We're just, this was it. Y'all knew it when we signed on. You got a 2-week window. At the end of that 2 weeks, if this is crazy, we can revisit. We go another 2 weeks.
Okay, Councilmember Cavallari.
So just to kind of follow up on that, 2 weeks is a little short. by best estimates, I mean, I'm going to be real when I'm going to be honest when I'm making this petition to my fellow council, that they're saying probably until the end of April that we're dealing with this, or Easter, what the president is saying, if we're to believe anything. So to make it really date restrictive like that and not tie it to the actual event we're trying to deal with kind of handcuffs us and maybe them. And I don't think anybody is going to try to really take advantage. This is battle conditions. They're just trying to survive. And if they can put a sign out there to make another 100, 200 bucks for the day, I mean, so be it. Let's be happy with it. Let's not overthink this and dissect it to where it, you know, there's so many restrictions and it just doesn't get to what we're trying to do. So let's not overthink it. It's a simple suspension of the MCMC for signs and allow the folks, if they want, they're not obligated, with a social media blast, minimal time spent, staff and the and our neighbors and our community members have an opportunity to maybe put a couple more bucks in their pocket where they otherwise would not have a chance to.
Mark?
Vince, I love your heart on this, and I want to be there with you. I've just seen where with good intentions, we stumble into some very unexpected consequences. We give people the benefit of the doubt and assume that their heart will be pure, and then they take advantage, and it ruins it for everybody. And it might only be one person. You're right, it is battle conditions. These people are desperate, and I support where your heart's at, but I don't want to create an opportunity here that bites us unintendedly. That's why, and my 2-week window has nothing to do with my expectation of the duration of the coronavirus, other than the fact that our governor seems to think at this point 2 weeks is sufficient. So I'm going with that. In 2 weeks, we'll revisit. If he goes two more weeks, but it gives us an out if this thing blows up. If our business owners do the right thing, are respectful of our desire to keep the standard and still give them a chance to enhance their business and enhance their message to the citizenry, I'm all for it. I love where your heart's at. I just don't want something we're not anticipating to sneak up and bite us.
Mark, could you live with 30 days? Because we're not going to be meeting.
Sure, sold, 30 days.
30 days, can everybody live with 30 days? Because we'll be back and we can readdress it. I share everybody's concern, because what's going to happen is we're going to do this and then they're going to say, oh, I need it this summer. And mm-hmm. Somebody with a pure heart is going to fall. That's not the way we do our city.
Yeah.
So 30 days, staff approves it. You'll know what you're looking at. Michael, can you guys handle that? Yes, somebody ma'am. Comes in with a drawing and you go yay or nay.
Well, liberally. They'll need to submit it online.
Okay. Okay, does that work for everybody?
Mark, we should have asked for 45 days.
30 is fine to start. We have lots of meetings coming up.
By the way, I would love to revisit our sign ordinance someday, because I think it's faulty, and I think it's been faulty for years.
Yeah, and Michael and I have talked about it perhaps this fall. So getting that scheduled, because you had mentioned it to me. And there's just no time right now. So Michael, do you need a motion? Or did we give direction?
Then it's purview.
You've given direction for 30 days and the discretion of the administration. We're going to be conservative and we're going to make sure that all the applicants know this is temporary, that we're trying to help them advertise those businesses that remain open.
Okay, and just so everybody knows, we have a list of all the restaurants in Mill Creek and the surrounding area. They have, whether they're closed, takeout, or delivery. So that information is available. It's online, and we're going to make it even more clear to the people. It's kind of lost behind a couple of links right now, but Michael's going to get that fixed. So we have made an effort already out there. So, okay, next up, Mark Bond, reports?
No report.
Steckler?
I don't have a report, but I do have a suggestion, considering how close we are. In our retreat, we had set a date of April 7th to have representatives come to a council meeting. And I know I've got somebody coming, and I think there's some other people that we've been reaching out to, but I was wondering if we should recommend moving that out maybe a month. And since we don't have everybody signed up, maybe maybe moving that out to Tuesday, May 5th, and contacting the people that we have set up now. I'm sure they all would understand. I mean, we could do something like this, but I think the general public should be invited, and I'd like to postpone that a month if the council agrees.
We're actually going, I talked to Councilmember Holzclaw, and we talked to the city manager and have canceled that meeting because we want to invite people here and we can't have people at City Hall. So until that happens, we're probably looking at June. On the first meeting in May, we're going to do a study session on the budget because this is going to hurt us substantially with the loss of sales tax and us, excuse me. We have to give direction to staff starting to prepare the budget. So the entire meeting in the study session in May will be budget related. What's going on? What's our cash? We're going to have, and we also need to give Jeff, since he just came on board and spent the last week doing IT work, we need to have him fully prepped with the financial statements, which we haven't seen. He believes he will have them available. And we want to get the information out to the council a little early so you all get a chance to read it, because this is going to be an in-depth discussion. So
what date do you recommend we move this to?
That's the study session. The first one in May is the budget study session. Even if it's just us, we can come here and spread out if we have to, given all the materials we're going to have. But as far as inviting people, and you are so right about having the public come and hear about what we're looking at, I think we're looking at least at June, the first meeting in June, our study session in June. And I believe, Naomi, have we called everybody and canceled them already? The people we invited to the April meeting?
Yes, that's all set, Mayor.
Okay, so those people have been notified.
Oh, they have, the people we have invited?
Yeah, Naomi's just said that that's been taken care of.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, we couldn't be here, and we knew we couldn't be here in April, so.
Great.
Scott Eastman, did somebody else sign up? Or what are these things up here? I'm getting notices up there.
Oh, that's
not that one, it said Scott Eastman up there.
Oh, I'm not sure, I didn't see it, sorry.
Scott, did you want to say something?
No, if I unmuted, I did inadvertently.
Oh, okay, that's what that is. Okay. Okay, so that's that. Let's see. So are we done with you? John, did you do a, that was yours. Okay. Okay, Stephanie.
I just wanted to, I don't actually have a report, but I just wanted to say what you were saying, that they have on the Facebook page, they did a really good job of putting up all of the restaurants. And I shared that and made sure everybody had it. And also, I want to thank them. Thank you for making sure that you're updating more on the website. I've noticed a few more notifications to let people know on Facebook what's going on and keep them in the loop with things that are happening. And also thank you. I had something that I had emailed in and asked them to put up, and Jeff made sure it got up, so that regarding the school lunches for the kids and how to get there and where that was going to be held. And so thank you for posting that on there for me. I appreciate it. That's it. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Holzclaw, any report?
No report tonight.
Mike, Todd?
I was going to report on the SCIT meeting briefly. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, speak up.
I'm speaking up. I don't know where the microphone is or how to make it go better, but I'll try. So the SCIT meeting this morning, as I mentioned earlier, was well attended by lots of folks. The main topic was a report from Doug Levy about the legislative actions on the transportation budget. And basically, they managed to find enough dollars here and there to patch the hole that was left by the 976. And so all the projects that were on pause are unpaused, and that's good news for Snohomish County. Nothing specific to Mill Creek, but Linwood and Lake Stevens both had important projects, and so they're unpaused. That's good news. But the word from Olympia is it's going to be really tough to fill this hole next year because it was only like $500 million this year. It's going to be $500 million times two in the next biennium. And so they're starting to talk about revenue packages. So as much as people don't want to hear about new taxes, that's what they're thinking about, is some kind of new tax package. to finance transportation because there's a huge hole in the budget. I'll leave it at that. The other thing I mentioned was that the people had a great meeting this morning with Skit, and they agreed to have an extra meeting every 2 weeks. So they're going to do it now. So 2 weeks from today, they'll have another Skit meeting as a check-in for both private sector and public sector folks, large and small, to talk about road projects and construction projects and everything.
He doesn't know where the microphone is.
Yeah. So I'll
be done. I guess it doesn't work. Thanks.
Thank you. City Manager, do you have anything?
No, Mayor.
Okay, so with that, we're down to audience communication again.
I'm going to unmute everybody. 1 second.
Yes.
I'm unmuting everybody. 1 minute. I'll let you know when everybody's unmuted. Okay.
So any audience communication?
Is this where the public interacts?
Hello? Yeah. Any audience communication? Say your name.
This is Will Nelson. Can I speak?
Yeah, go ahead, Will. Name and address, Will. We have stuff to follow the rules.
Okay. Will Nelson, 14925 29th Drive Southeast, Mill Creek, Washington. Three items. First of all, this remote meeting is very less than acceptable, obviously. Two, based on work experience, I have a real hard time with reserve police officers being put in positions of authority, and I'm not going to go into the details of that, but I would be very much opposed, except under extreme, extreme conditions, seeing any reserve police officer be given any real authority. Even at my advanced age, that would be a real in-your-face confrontation between me and them. And about 10 years ago, there was a police reserve officer who took a police car and went out and started talking to citizens about their driving habits. Now, that person is no longer a reserve police officer anywhere. But I've come to the point with this stuff and these guys that if I see somebody that looks like a police officer and I do not recognize them, I do ask for their ID. And I hope a police officer never gets upset that I've asked for the ID, but I have a real hard time with reserve police officers assuming some position of authority. And the third item is, the UW Virology Lab is posting their COVID-19 test results. Those test results for the state of Washington show no increase. Now, let me restate that. The number of COVID-19 cases is apparently flatlined, as looking at the chart, and while it varies from day to day, it's staying between like 84 and 159 per day and not increasing above that. So maybe there's some hope in that regard. And that concludes my comments.
Okay, anybody else?
Yes.
Barb, is that
Hello.
You? Hi, Barb.
Barb Heidel. Barb Heidel, 1401 144th Place, Southeast, Mill Creek. I want to thank the city very much for offering this audio process in real time, which is so much better listening to the council meeting minus all the kinks at the beginning, which were difficult to hear the feedback. But it's so much better than the regular audio recordings. I do hope we don't have to do this for long because I like to be present, but I appreciate you going through this process to offer this to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Barb. Anybody else? Anybody else there?
Yeah, I have one.
Okay, name and address.
My name is Scott Boyer. I'm with Morgan Mechanical. Our address is 12314 134th Court Northeast. We're in Redmond. In reference to capital projects, just to give you guys an insight of what's happening in the construction industry, we are noticing no slowdowns in job sites that have loose concentration of workers. So we do have a job site where a concentrated amount of work is happening in a high rise in Seattle, and that job site has closed down, but all of the smaller works are moving forward. And it's actually probably better that it is right now, because those buildings are now empty. So there's no loss of use. There's no contact with building employees or staff or anything like that. So it's my suggestion to take a look at those tabled capital projects and see what really actually does fit the opportunity at the moment.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, with that, we're going to recess to executive session. Jeff, would you like to explain how that's going to work?
Yes. So everybody except for the council members and Michael, if you can go ahead and hang up, and we will continue this in 10 minutes for the executive session.
Can't we just do it now?
Yes,
10 minutes.
How about 5 minutes? I just want to make sure that I have a chance to make reconcile everybody that's currently on here and make sure that we dismiss them from this call.
Just for security. So we will start in 5 minutes. Michael, how much time do you need?
Mayor, Scott Michelle asked for a maximum of 15 minutes with no action afterwards.
Okay, so we will recess into executive session until 8 p.m. Does that work? Okay, with that, we will be in executive session, and he's going to fuss with the computer.
Do we need a different link then, or is it just going to be this one?
What's the topic of this executive session?
Oh, I'm sorry. To discuss the acquisition of real estate and potential litigation pursuant to RCW 4230-110-1B.
Thanks, ma'am.
Okay.
I'm going to put us on mute. If you could stay on the line, council members, and I will make sure that the executive session is started. One second.